morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Great weekend of basketball to discuss. Let's jump right in. LeBron, he's got his new head coach. The Warriors find a way to win big without Kevin Durant. But you got to start with last night's Game 7 out east. You know, it's rare we start a highlight with the last bounce on the last play of the last second of the game. But Sixers, Raptors, and Kawhi Leonard. His buzzer-beating shot bounced four times on the rim before falling, winning both the game and the series for the Toronto Raptors. Two of his 41 points in the Game 7 win. So Toronto moving on to face the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, while the Philadelphia 76ers are heading home. CC, let's open the talk with you. How remarkable was that moment you just saw right there?
It really was. It's I think, the most iconic shot that I have seen, absent of Jordan making one to be able to finish off the Utah Jazz. But in this situation, a Game 7, I've never seen a bounce quite like that. The ball seemed like when it hit the rim the first time, when it went up, like the ball went half flat. For it to be able to bounce the way that it did twice on this side of the rim.
Shots that hit the rim like that are supposed to now go back towards the shooter as a miss. He hit the front of the rim on that shot fading away. Like, just the physics of it make it seem like as soon as you see the first bounce, we're going to overtime.
Right. So that's what it seemed. Yeah, we've seen buzzer beaters. But I think with the overall story, where we were a year ago, as far as Kawhi Leonard the person, Toronto as a franchise, what they decided to do, trade for an injured superstar who was criticized. I don't know many people that were like me supporting Kawhi. I felt like I had the facts. I felt like I had the accurate doctor's report as far as what happened to him. I knew Kawhi as a person, that he would not do what people were accusing him of doing, faking an injury to be able to force his way out of there. So those things, but it was still, it's still a huge chance when you make this trade. And to be able to get to this moment for that fan base and for him to be able to hit that shot after nearly giving him an opportunity where Jimmy Butler, if he would have pulled up and hit a three, we don't know if we have the Kawhi heroic. So for me, the bounce and everything, the franchise, the whole overall story, Nick Nurse as the coach, as an assistant, they decide not only we're going to fire the coach, trade for Kawhi, it validates these moves that they made, Nick.
And I'm really glad you brought up probably the most iconic shot in NBA history, the Jordan over Russell, because this was, on an individual standpoint, not the level of importance, not the level of player, I understand that. But from what he had to do for his team to win that game, this was that Jordan game. Jordan in that basketball game was 15 of 35. His team only scored 87 points. This game had a very similar feel, where it was guys could not make shots.
Yes.
There was one spectacular player who was going to have to say, be damned with efficiency, I'm going to have to do everything. Jordan, as I mentioned, that game was 15 of 35 for 45 points. Kawhi last night was 16 of 39 for 41 points. In that game, Jordan's highest scoring teammate was Tony Kukoc with 15.
Yep.
Last night, it was Kawhi with Serge with 14. And this was, that was not a buzzer beater, and that wasn't the, it wasn't quite the finality of this moment. It wasn't a Game 7. But this was as close as we've gotten to that moment for a player who, and I'll credit Kendrick Perkins, who said this a few weeks ago, stylistically this whole playoffs has had a lot of elements of Jordan's game, a lot of mid-range, a lot of turnaround, doing it on both ends of the court. And we have been so spoiled in these NBA playoffs. As of 3 weeks ago, there had been five shots like this in NBA history. Series-winning buzzer beaters.
Right. Now, I knew this playoffs was special just by watching the eye, how many series. The series that had the least most attention of the last four was the Denver series. Mm-hmm. And we're like, wow, what a treat.
And that was an epic one. That ended up, we'll talk about that later today. But there had only been five. You could list them. There's Ralph Sampson's against the Lakers in 86. Jordan had two against the Cleveland Cavaliers. One, the iconic The Shot in 1989. Stockton beat the Rockets once with it. And Damian Lillard back in 2014 beat the Rockets with one of these. There have now been two in the last 3 weeks. Dame over OKC and Kawhi in this moment. We'd never seen one in a Game 7. Jordan's in a Game 5 was the closest we had seen where it was for both teams, win or go home. And it was an unbelievable capstone to this series for Kawhi Leonard, where aside from Game 5, every single story, every game of the series, the story has been when Kawhi's on the court, the Raptors are great. And when he goes to the bench, they fall apart. Last night was more of the same, where Kawhi had to do everything, and he did everything, culminating in that moment.
You sort of glossed over it, but this was the first one in a Game 7. The magnitude that is huge. So as soon as I saw the shot go in, the first thing I thought of, and I'm sure fans alike, oh, this will convince him to stay. You make a shot like that, the city already embraced you. They love you and adore you. You can be a hero right away. Do you think Kawhi Leonard's, do you think this impacts Kawhi's decision whether or not he stays in Toronto?
Well, I do know this. I do know that there was a great chance of Toronto re-signing Kawhi. I know that his overall experience, it couldn't have gone better. As far as the people, not only Danny Green, who they threw in the trade, that was important to Kawhi. He had a familiar face. You know, Danny Green's not playing great, but he's a familiar face. They made some adjustments as far as the staffing. There's another gentleman that's on the staff that assists with Kawhi. That was important from a medical standpoint. They have the doctor that Kawhi wanted. He works with Kawhi and has worked, and we have seen Kawhi not have any type of setback. So to me, man, life is about experience. And his experience in Toronto has been amazing. And this only helps their case that they have the right coach. Kawhi, at the end of the game, I thought it was interesting that he said he was down on himself because he missed the free throw. He was down on himself because he felt like he didn't hustle back, because he felt like he could have helped Serge Ibaka block Jimmy Butler's shot to be able to tie the game. He mentions all those things. He said, but I made up my mind, regardless of what play the coach calls. And that, to me, said Kawhi has the ultimate faith in this organization, in that coaching staff, to be able to put him in a position where he can win. Now he's in the conference final. I mean, if he was in the Western Conference final, we wouldn't be thinking, why would he want to leave there? So I know it's north of the border. I know it's a long shot. But Toronto, to me, is in the driver's seat as far as securing Kawhi and if he's where he's going to play basketball into the future. And also, by the way, Jenna, I think you might like this. They can also pay him $50 more million than anybody.
Which always helps. I think this was, you have to look at this from had they won, especially winning that way, and had they lost. What would the discussion have been if Kawhi had played this exact game, done everything, carried them, but that shot doesn't go in, they lose in overtime, or Jimmy Butler does pull up from three, and they lose a devastating game like that. And then Kawhi's lasting taste going into the offseason is, I carried these guys this whole round. We couldn't get through this round. What if I can do this here with my teammates playing like this, I can do this anywhere. And to me, that would have been more incentive for him to leave.
To leave.
Now, instead, it's not only this moment that we just saw. It's the moments he's about to get over the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi Leonard has not played into the conference finals since 2014, when they won the title and he won finals MVP. He played game one of the conference finals a few years ago, but got hurt mid-third quarter when Zaza put his foot underneath him. So Kawhi is about to get to play in the biggest basketball games he's played in 5 years. Of course that's going to help Toronto. Of course it's going, him being able to taste this level of playoff basketball that he has never tasted as a superstar. He was a good player in 2014.
Yeah.
He was far from the team's number one option. I know he won finals MVP, but he did that while averaging in the teens in that series and in that season. Now he gets to play in the conference finals, the only game on every night, as the superstar on a team. He's never had that before, and of course that helps Toronto. This is the type of moment that could be a franchise changer for Toronto, not for this season, but for the next 5 to 8 seasons.
And no matter what happens, for some, I'm sure, validates the move that Toronto made, basically renting his player, whether it stays or not. Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. All right, so Kawhi was incredible in last night's win over Philly. 41 points, 8 rebounds, and a game-winning buzzer beater. Nick, put a grade on Kawhi's night.
I'll be quick. This is easy. A+. 41 points, the game winner. The only guy on his team offensively to show up, Kawhi gets an A+.
You got to give him an A+. It was very difficult to score in these game sevens. You look at the earlier game and Kawhi's game. Only three guys scored more than 21 points. Let you know the level of defense and intensity. A+, as good as you can get. Head of the class, nigga, Nick, one of one.
Absolutely, one of one last
night. I mean, he was special. Absolutely. He was special.
All right, let's take a break. We'll talk about the team they beat coming up in a little bit in the 76ers. But on the other side, how are the Warriors able to take down the Rockets without Kevin Durant? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Welcome back. We'll get to the Warriors in just a second, but first, Nuggets and Blazers and C.J. McCollum. Chases down. Jamal Murray blocks the shot off the backboard.
Oh, this one will be remembered for a long time. He had a shout-out from his boy, the 303, LeBron from Akron. CJ's are not too far away getting the iconic block against the backboard, Nick. This was when you said LeBron passed, what's your name, wasn't it?
Well, that game, that moment, when LeBron passed Jordan. That is true. CJ, man, 37 points, road game seven. Woo!
Raptors and Sixers, Kawhi getting by Tobias Harris, somehow makes the crazy up-and-under layup.
Oh, he got fortunate on this one. Perfect defense by Philadelphia. Joel Embiid comes over to try to block it. He puts a little English on it off the backboard. It was that kind of night for
Kawhi. He was guessing right there. Just throw it up, see what happens, bounce around. He was so sensational.
Let me give you more here. Moving on, Kawhi, watch this. The incredible fadeaway over Joel Embiid to send Toronto to the conference. Hold it. Finals. There it was.
Watching this for the 14th time, I still can't believe it went in.
Neither can they.
For it to hit the rim there and bounce up and just a touch forward. Because if it bounces straight up like that and a touch backwards, we're going to overtime. This is...
Yeah, Kawhi had a little hesitation right before to get Joel Embiid a little off guard where he couldn't get the best bounce. He defended as well as he could.
God, that's a tough shot.
Amazing shot.
That's a tough shot under regular circumstances. The buzzer of a game seven.
Right in front of your bench.
Plinko.
If they don't have that one, print it up and have it in the Raptors' office this morning when the players walk in.
All right, moving on. The Golden State Warriors finished off the Rockets Friday night. No KD in game six, so no problem in game six. Steph Curry had 23 of his 33 points in the fourth quarter after an unprecedented scoreless first half. Klay Thompson chipped in 27 of his own as the Warriors eliminated the Rockets from the playoffs for the fourth time in 5 years. Nick, what message did the Warriors send by winning without KD?
All right, well, listen, the Rockets are never going to beat them. And we'll talk more about the Rockets another time. But the Rockets are going to have to wait for the Warriors to be done being the Warriors. They never punted, and they could never beat them. So set them aside for a moment. What they showed by showing up the way they did is they are the bleeping champs, and you are going to have to rip it from their cold, dead hands. No Boogie Cousins, who cares? No Kevin Durant, no problem. We still got Steph. Yeah, scoreless in the first half. Don't worry. Your splash brother Clay will have you covered. Draymond bringing it with ferocious intensity from the word go. And then the less heralded of the original championship core. How about Sean Livingston has his second double-digit scoring game of 2019.
After he did nothing, basically, this series.
Absolutely. Well, this season, Jenna.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, second time he scored in double digits this calendar year. Iggy, what I say, if Iggy hits threes, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
You're the opposition. Iggy hits five of them. Andre Iguodala, who looked like he was on the back end of his career this season, three times all year, he scored 15-plus points. He's already done it five times these playoffs. This is a championship team with a championship coach that got stomach punched thinking Kevin Durant wasn't going to be out for the next couple weeks. When he walked off the court, they thought, I believe, in the moment, KD might be out. That might have been his last moment as a Warrior. And they rallied in game five, and then they stole game six. Get away with a Steph Curry scoreless first half. Scoreless first half from Steph Curry on the road in one of the biggest games this franchise in Houston has played in a quarter century. And you win. You take control. You're down seven in the fourth quarter. No panic. You win. This was a spectacular game by the original Golden State Warriors.
I'm going to let you talk about the players because I think that one thing that will be missed in all this, and he won't get credit, is the coach. Because once Kevin Durant gets hurt, after game number five, and they play an amazing 14 minutes, because if you don't, let's go back to that 14 minutes in game number five. If they don't get it together and win that game, this is not a closeout game. You still have to go to game seven. So what Steve Kerr did after he found out that KD, he didn't tear his Achilles, there was a sense of relief for that. He didn't think KD would be available anytime soon, but he told everyone in the locker room, come to the gym, ready to play tomorrow. And he went through, they activated Jacob Evans, put him in KD's spot. He's the only player in the first 24 minutes of that game who did not play. They had 11 players play over 3 minutes. Now, to me, people will be like, oh, well, what does that really mean? That made the players fresher in the second half. No one knew that Steph would go over. No. But those core group of guys, that being Iggy, that being Draymond, that being Klay, they were a lot fresher in the second half because of what Steve Kerr did, and I believe it happened right after game number five when he comes into that locker room being like, listen, man, we don't have anything to worry. We're going to go in numbers. Everyone come ready to play. That's how we're going to win game number six because I knew the veteran players, that being Steph, Klay, and Draymond, they got a lot to prove. And them being able to win a game without Kevin Durant, it sends a huge message to that original group that they had together, and they knew this was a rare opportunity, and they took advantage of it.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Up until the fourth quarter of Game 5, this was a hit-or-miss Warriors team. Some nights they had big nights, some nights they didn't. They did what they needed to do to win, and then that fourth quarter came, and there was no Kevin Durant, basically. They got together like you talked about. How important was it for them to show each other that they could do this, that they weren't just reliant on 40 from KD every night?
Well, I think the team, the people in that locker room, never doubted they could do it. All of those guys have sacrificed for the greater good, if you will, to win by bringing Kevin Durant and not only sacrificing numbers and shots, sacrificing the style. There is a style that they play without Kevin Durant that is very difficult to play with him because you can play it to a degree with him, but he's such a singular talent that it is smart. Dump it down to KD and let him go to work. Oh, he's got 6 foot tall Patrick Beverley on him. Dump it down to KD and let him go to work. And that's not what the Warriors have ever done. To me, This was a message to the 29 other teams in the league that have been waiting for 3 years for Kevin Durant to leave. The Warriors reminding them, Kevin Durant, even if he does leave, probably is leaving. Guess who should be the favorites going into next year? Us, even without him, because it has always been the case with Golden State. I don't care how mad people get when I say it. I will continue to say it. KD has been the greatest luxury item in sports history. They have not ever desperately needed him the way any team in league history would need a player of his talent, because they can always revert back to the style that won him a championship and then won him 73 games and got him to game 7 of a championship the previous year.
And it's also a style that won many, myself and many other basketball fans, over to who they were. Because they were a fun bunch. They were different with Clay, with Steph, Draymond, the way he played, their passing, their movement. This was the way we fell in love with the Warriors. The Warriors start getting all this hate, not because they won championships, because Kevin Durant having the Warriors down 3-1, the Warriors storm back, and then Kevin Durant decides to be able to join them. That's when people started hating the Warriors. But the basketball, from a pure basketball standpoint, this is what we saw a number of years ago, what we fell in love with, and it was great to get a glimpse of it. And if Kevin Durant decides to leave, man, the NBA is in good hands.
All right. Well, now the Warriors move on. They'll face the Blazers game 1 Tuesday night, and we will talk about what went wrong for the Rockets yet again. But coming up, how about the Lakers? Did they blow it with their new coaching hire already? That's next on First.
The Lakers, they make all the right moves.
The 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off June 7th, right around the corner. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champs head to France looking to win an historic 4th World Cup. All the matches will be live here on Fox and FS1.
Less than 4 weeks away now.
Looking forward to that. Time now for Say What? The Jets' 3rd overall draft pick, Quinn Williams, is the talk of the town in New York. But the 21-year-old rookie can't help but be a little starstruck by his new teammates. Say what?
So, I was like a little fan at first, because you got to think about it, at the time, like 7 months ago, I didn't know I was going to start. So it's like to be in this position right now, I'm like, bro, that's crazy. So like when I get to meet people, I'll be like, man, that's dope. Like I met Le'Veon Bell yesterday and I'm like, whoa, like this Le'Veon Bell, like the number one running back in the NFL, like it's just crazy. So I know I'm one of the people too though. So it's like but I don't really look at it like that though. So like I met Sam Darnold, that's crazy. Like bro, you Sam Darnold, Jamal Adams, I'm like, bro, I got Jamal Adams on my ultimate team, so it's like that's crazy.
That's
got,
awesome.
Got Jamal Adams on his Madden Ultimate team. See, and if you look, if we zoom in on the fella's face right there, he's already got the braces.
Yeah.
Now that's your advice to young guys when they
get
to the
NFL. Yeah, he had this in Alabama. They got a scholarship program. They got a dental program there, too. Nick Saban knows appearance is very important. But I need him to keep that same personality.
Yeah.
I mean, same personality.
You know,
he's from down home Alabama. He is so excited, and he is right. 11 months ago, he didn't know if he was going to be a starter at Alabama. I'm looking forward to watching his career. Now, the big city, he's a long way away from home.
Oh, yes,
and
he is.
He's a kid, man.
No doubt.
I mean, all these guys drafted are young, obviously, but he's about as young as you can be to be drafted in the NFL, 21 years old. Man, his personality, all these interviews
nice.
That we've seen from him.
Wide-eyed, right? Excited.
He's got a little locket that he spent some new money on. He's got a picture of his mom. Read the story on him and his mom, and his mom passed away.
That's awesome.
Yes.
All right, time now for Stories to Start Your Morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. The Toronto Raptors sent the Sixers packing last night, thanks to Kawhi's incredible series-clinching buzzer beater. 2 of Kawhi's 41 points. CeCe, how impressive was the moment?
Oh, it was impressive. Impressive as I've seen, besides the Jordan, a couple moments him. He hit that shot against Craig Elo and the Cavs to be able to knock them out. The shot he hits against Russell against Utah. This one will be right up there. Game 7, though, that bounce on the rim is one of a kind.
Bounce on the rim is one of a kind, and the game really did remind me of Game 6, Bulls-Jazz 98. That game was a defensive struggle. Final score 87-86. This one, 92-90. Jordan in that game scored 45, but it took him 35 shots. Kawhi in this game scored 41, took him 39 shots. Had to do everything on both ends, culminating what was a spectacular series for him. Now for the Raptors, the others got to step their game up here in this next round.
There's no doubt.
Because Milwaukee is a different animal.
Yeah, they were terrified to shoot there at the end.
Oh, man. And everybody, man, these game sevens, find out who's ready, who's not.
All right, moving on. Blazers beat the Nuggets in game 7 to advance to the Western Conference Finals. 100-96 was the final. C.J. McCollum leading the way for Portland with 37 points. Blazers now face the Golden State Warriors. Nick, how impressive was CJ in this one?
And I talked to CJ briefly after the game, and I told him, like, I don't know if he recognizes 37 points in a road game seven, the type of elite company that puts him in. No one's ever had 50 in a game seven anywhere. He was 10 points shy of the all-time game seven scoring record, and he did it on the road against the higher seed, against the heavy favorite, when his guy, Dame was having a rough night. What was he, 3 of 17
yes.
from the field? So they needed every last moment and that last play of the game. He says, I told Coach Stotts, set them down low, 1-4 low.
I'll get you a bucket.
I'll get you a bucket. And he got them that bucket.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Spectacular athletes. I'm more impressed with he decides to talk with Nick Wright. After the greatest game of his career, my homeboy from Ohio, I can't get a call from him. Look, I introduce you to people, make him, and Odell Beckham. Oh, yeah, I talked to OBJ. He was in town last night.
What we got commonalities, man.
Bro, now we got CJ. CJ, bro, don't be calling Nick Wright, man, after your big moment, dog. Not Nick Wright.
Great game, CJ.
All right, finally, as we all predicted when LeBron got to L.A., the Lakers hired Frank Vogel to be their new head coach. It is a 3-year deal. Vogel previously coached in Orlando and Indiana, where he battled LeBron in the conference finals multiple times. He'll be joined by former head coach Jason Kidd, who reportedly have a prominent role on his bench. Nick, what do you make of the hire? I mean, looking at you.
You go.
Looking at you, Colin.
Because I want to hear what you say.
This is the thing. When you were reading it, I changed my mind. We were going to go to Nick to have him start. But
it even said he's.
Go ahead. But
yes.
Go ahead.
But this is the. Jenna, I just wanted to say this first. I would feel a lot different if we started the search with him part of the process. If Vogel would have been part, we're going to interview 5 people. We're going to look at Juwan Howard.
I mean, because he wasn't even part of the first 4 candidates.
No. So if we start that way, I can be unhappy with who you select and believe they're going to select someone. You could have selected someone better. I could, but if you're in the search and then you go, you finish the search, select the coach. Oh, he turned you down because based on what's been said, Monty turned them down first before Ty Lue had a chance to turn them down. So now you get 2 coaches turn you down. You reopen the search, and it's a one-person search. No one else is interviewed. That right there, it's going to be hard for me unless you just have some superior coaching skills or you have an unbelievable resume for me to overcome just the whole process of how we got to whoever they selected, Nick.
If Frank Vogel was hired this offseason to be the coach of any other team, it might not make the show. But if it did make the show, here's what I would have said for any other team, any team. How the hell did this guy get a job this quickly? We have documented evidence that he is not a good NBA coach. Documented evidence. Now, maybe he'll turn it around. Third time's a charm. He did a nice job in Indiana. And he got into a couple conference finals. Paul George, Roy Hibbert. Mm-hmm. They even got to a game 7 against LeBron's Miami Heat team. And at that point, he looked like a really good head coach. Then yes. Paul George got hurt. They had a bad year. The following year, they got bounced in the first round in 7 by, I think, the Raptors. And Larry Bird in Indiana said, we need a change. And at that moment, people thought Frank Vogel was a good coach. And he got hired to take over an up-and-coming Orlando team. Immediately. Didn't have to miss no time. Go, Orlando. They had won 35 wins. They were trying to make a push for the playoffs. Coming off 35 wins, they won 25 games. They won 29 games. He gets fired. And they make the playoffs immediately without him. Same roster. Top 6 scorers, the exact same. Orlando last year with 25 wins. This year with 42 wins. Same roster.
Maybe have some of the same young, talented players, lottery picks that he was supposed to develop. Just like the Lakers, besides LeBron.
This is baffling that Frank Vogel gets a third bite at this apple for any team. Much less a team with immense pressure to win immediately and right now. I do hope there are a few other things about this that are, like, the Jason Kidd part of this, they clearly wanted to hire Jason Kidd. They were so upset by the optics of it. People were like, well, I mean, he stabbed coaches and teammates in the back as a player. He had a domestic violence allegation. He got a DUI.
Drunk,
yes. He finagled his way out of Brooklyn. He went to Milwaukee. So they were so upset by the optics of that. Do you remember after they interviewed Jason Kidd, who they clearly wanted to hire? They leaked to the media, oh, it was a fake interview. It was just a courtesy interview. And now they make Vogel, take him on a stat, because Vogel will take all the things Ty Lue didn't want to take. Three-year deal, no problem. You pick my staff, no problem. I'm just happy to get another coaching job. This is baffling, but it should put to rest this notion. LeBron James, the puppet master. LeBron James, remember, he in charge of everything in L.A. He wasn't in charge of this. And Frank Vogel, if he's going to be a good coach, he's going to have to prove it to me, because I watched Orlando last year be a disaster, and this year with the same players be a playoff team.
Well, it can't be too baffling, because Luke Walton, who basically had a disastrous season this year with the Lakers, didn't have to wait more than a minute and a half, and he got a job in Sacramento. But then tell me why. Tell me what the Lakers saw in Vogel that either we don't see or fans don't see or the media is not seeing, that they thought this is the guy that's going to come in, going to help us win, going to help us land a free agent, going to help us get back into the playoffs. Like, just someone explain it to me.
Well, I can't tell you what the Lakers saw. I don't know what Kurt Rambis, because it would be hard for me to look through life through Kurt Rambis' shades. But there's something Kurt Rambis saw. I don't see it. And if Kurt Rambis is a part of your selection as far as you selecting a coach, there's no telling what you might end up with. But I'm going to tell you this, though. There wasn't people calling. This wasn't a coveted job. I wonder if they didn't hire Frank Vogel, how many more coaches, the credible NBA coaches, could they have interviewed? Because you already had two turn the job down. This right here with LeBron James, this is embarrassing. One of the stellar franchises with one of the great players we've ever had. Nobody wanted this job.
Well, I think I can answer your question very directly, what they saw in Frank Vogel. Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis saw a guy that was not going to fight them for any modicum of control.
Yes.
Rob Pelinka,
they wanted to keep power,
runs the Los Angeles Lakers. He is the final word in all of it. This is very, now he might have to report to Jeannie Buss, who then I guess reports to Linda Rambis, who then, you know, but Rob Pelinka, I thought Brian Windhorst, to his credit, laid this out very intelligently in an article people should read. There's two types of coaching hires.
Yes.
Bold ones or ones where you want to hold on to as much power as possible. So you hire a coach, you're going to take a three-year deal. You're going to let me pick your staff. No problem. I just want it, man. I thought I was going to have to go be an assistant for years before I get another opportunity. No problem. I get to coach the Lakers. We'll be in the playoffs. Sure. So this was about Rob Pelinka consolidating his power. When Magic walked out the door, we thought Pelinka could lose some power. They'd bring in Masai. They'd try to get Bob Myers. They'd call up R.C. Buford.
Now we know why that plan
never
happened. Was never discussed.
No. And also we know that maybe Pelinka's quest for power is one of the reasons Magic walked out the door. And I'm going to say, there's one other thing that I want to say that's in reference to this show. Because when we were first talking about the Lakers coaching search, and it was Monty Williams, Ty Lue, and Juwan Howard were the three candidates we were discussing, I believe, at the time. Jason Kidd, I don't think, was discussed. Steven Jackson was on this set. People got very mad at him. Because Steven Jackson said, I'll be honest with you, I don't care who they pick. I'm just glad it's a black coach. And his point was, black coaches don't get the opportunities some of their white contemporaries do. Black coaches certainly don't get to be Frank Vogel. Don't ever play, fail in one spot, have a disastrous tenure in another spot that we find out immediately thereafter the team's better without you. 1 year out of coaching, go coach the Lakers. Like, Ty Lue, everyone's like, oh, Ty Lue, they offered Ty Lue the same contract they offered Frank Vogel. Ty Lue was a success when three NBA Finals won a championship, and it's just ridiculous.
On the other side of that, because I believe there's another argument on that, it's hard to argue when two African-Americans turn down the job. Now, maybe if you have a different topic, you've been like, oh, we might, but yes, they might not get the opportunity. But when two brothers turn down the job, that's not the time to be asking, whoa, man, African-American coaches don't get. Yeah, that part is true. But two guys turned this job down.
Right. But I guess the only thing I'd say is Ty Lue being offered the same contract you offered to Frank Vogel. Like
that was a conversation we should have had before Frank Vogel.
So, sure.
I mean,
I understand your point, but go ahead.
The biggest question now is going to be if they can land or what free agent they are going to land, and you wonder how much now Vogel is going to affect that move. All right, let's move on to the Philadelphia 76ers. Their season came to an end last night on Kawhi's dramatic buzzer beater for Philly, arguably one of the best starting fives in the league, but a starting five which played only 21 games together all season long. They went all in to try and win this year, trading for Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, and they came up short to the Toronto Raptors. Here is Joel Embiid after the loss.
I don't know, game seven, losing a game that way, last shot. after a hard-fought game, I feel like we had a chance. You know, a lot of things go through your mind, and it sucks.
Joel, you've been here for almost all of the process. Where would you say the process is right now? And you just played the most minutes you've ever played in regulation. Are you tired?
I don't give a damn about the process. And no, I'm not tired.
All right, and a lot of questions now surrounding this team as they head into the offseason with the coaching, with some personnel, with contracts that are going to expire and whatnot. What do you think are the biggest issues facing this team as we move now to
Well, they have to figure out a way to survive when that man goes to the bench. I mean, last night was another just golden example of what's been the story the entire series and the entire season for them. When Joel Embiid goes to the bench, they fall apart. Last night he played 45 minutes. 45 minutes. They outscored the Raptors by 10 in those 45 minutes. In the 3 minutes he sat, they lost by 12. Greg Monroe came in the game for 101 seconds. They lost those 101 seconds by 9 points. They have no answer for when he goes to the bench. That was the story of the whole series, was they could not account for when Embiid wasn't out there. The other element is one of the reasons they can't account for when Embiid's not out there is the other part of the process. Their other young star is not a young star right now. He is a potential star, and he does a lot of things really well, but in these close games at the end of playoff games, you saw it. They basically had three shot clock violations. Only one was called a shot clock violations, but three straight possessions, 85-85, 87-85 was the score, coming out of a timeout where they had shot clock violation or they had a de facto shot clock violation. This was the first one after a timeout. They then took a 27-foot three because the clock was winding down, turned the ball over. Like, their offense grinded to a halt, and it was terrible in part because they're playing 4-on-5 offensively. So those are all issues for them that predate what they're doing with Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris.
They need a point guard. And that's why you can't run your offense. I don't care what the coach says. I don't care what Ben Simmons says. I get so sick of people say, oh, man, he's a point guard. Oh, okay. Why can't you run your offense at the end of the game? Because he doesn't have the intangibles. Just because a guy can dribble does not make him a point guard. You need someone to be able to set it up. And like I said last week, let's not forget Markelle Fultz not being on this team. It showed again because the process wasn't about just those two players. Right. There was another player involved that was supposed to be part of that process, and he is a pure point guard. Now, he is going through – he went through a whole bunch of things and everything off the court. But that's where they have a hole in their roster. So, for me, what do they need to do? Like, they need to be able to fill that void. They need to be able to get a point guard. Now, I do believe that Ben Simmons is a special – talent. But when you get in games like this, and I'm going to say it again, it becomes important to be able to shoot the basketball outside of the restricted area. The biggest game of his career, he shoots the ball 5 times. He's an all-star. You would have to, man, a guy would have to have a broken wrist to be an all-star and not shoot the ball in critical situations like this. Why do they struggle when Joel Embiid's off? Because they're challenged offensively. Ben Simmons is a hole. He is a liability. They are basically playing 5 defenders on 4 offensive players, and he does not have, at this point in his career, the skill that big guards like Magic Johnson, LeBron James, to set up, understand passing lanes, understand those things, comfortable enough dribbling the basketball with both hands. He is not that player. You can try to make him out to be, but he's not that player at this stage. And I do understand that he is young. I do understand that.
Yeah.
But at this stage of his career, he's not that player.
So do you think this team looks different next year?
Well, that's the thing is, I still think, despite all of that, if you're Philly, because you have traded away the draft picks, because even if guys walk, you're not going to have a ton of space because you are going to re-up Simmons at some point. I do think that you have to do all you can to keep Jimmy Butler, and you got to do all you can to keep Tobias Harris. If I had to pick one of the two, I'd pick Jimmy Butler. But they are going to now Zaire Smith, their first round pick this year, will be back. Like they should hopefully be able to develop more of a bench. But it's going to be about, can you keep the players that you traded away future assets for? I believe their ownership will attempt to. And does Ben Simmons do something he clearly did not do this offseason, which is put in the requisite work to add another layer to his game, even if that's a multi-offseason process. He didn't even, to me, get to step one of that process between years one and two of his actual active career.
Yeah, they can't sign Tobias to the max. They can't sign Jimmy Butler to the max. Like, both of those guys have to come together. Like, what's best for Philly? Is both of those guys come together and say, we want to be part of these young guys developing. We're willing to take a little bit less to be able to stay here.
All right. Take a break. Coming up, did James Harden choke by coming up short against Golden State? That's next on First Things First. Here's how you know it's going to be a good day. When this guy sits down
what
in the
up,
seat.
Man?
Chris Broussard, our NBA analyst, always.
I know what this is. I know what happened. I know you enjoyed your Mother's Day yesterday.
Yeah.
But Mama's on the East Coast. That's why we get Chris after Mother's Day. He scoops in, gets a, hey, y'all pay for my ticket.
A list of holidays that we get
you for, that would
be great. Happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Same to the three of you. So. Tough day for the Rockets on Friday night. They lost to the Warriors in Game 6 despite getting 35 points from James Harden and despite KD not suiting up for Golden State. Houston now enters the offseason with more questions about their postseason than answers. Many of them asked of James Harden after the loss.
They're a very, very good team. Like, they're a great team. They've been in the finals for the last 4 or 5 years. Like, we're not losing to, you know, some scrubs, you know. So we got to find a way to keep getting better, keep growing, keep getting better, and keep putting ourselves in a position to keep playing them.
This was not fun, and I guarantee you, James and Chris and our team is very upset right now. They kicked our ass in our home court. They beat us by 10 points in the fourth quarter. It's unacceptable, okay? We just have to be better, and I know that we're going to rise to the occasion, and our time's going to come. You know, James is 30 years old. Michael didn't win his first championship till 30. Hakeem didn't win his first championship till 30. I can promise you we're going to win some championships with James Harden, okay? Because we are not going to sit here. We will go to battle every year. We're going to have a strong offseason, and we're going to do whatever we can do to be a better team. Okay, we are not going to sit on our hands. I can promise you that.
All right, Broussard, let me ask you, is Tillman Furtado right? The Rockets are going to win titles with James Harden?
Well, I think he's wrong about Michael Jordan. Wasn't Jordan 28?
Yeah, Jordan was not 30 when he won his first title.
Yeah.
He won a title at 30. But yeah, it was his second or third one.
Will they win the title with James Harden? If I had to bet my life on it, I would say no. But I don't look at it as a flaw
Very
in
dramatic,
James.
But I guess.
Yeah, right. Or gun to my head, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a flaw in James Harden. Like, look, we know his struggles in the past in big games. You can go back to San Antonio game 6, shoots 11 times, you know, scores, what, 10, 11 points, whatever it was, the 12 turnovers against Golden State and all that. This was not that. He showed up in game 6, mm-hmm. 35 points. He showed up throughout the series. Once he was raked across the eyes, he played well, 35 points a game, mm-hmm. 46% shooting from the floor. Harden played well. The Rockets' problem is, first of all, they're strapped as far as finances. So what changes can they make? Chris Paul, at his age, the decline in his game, I don't think they're going to be able to trade him. He's got 3 years, $120 million-plus left on his deal. And I don't even know if they want to move him just because of the deals they've made with him. They shouldn't have gave him that contract last summer, but they felt like they kind of had to. So what they need is a front court star, okay? If you look at the history of this league, from my 25 years of covering the league, even before as a fan, no, very few teams, if any, win championships without a front court star. Now, I thought in the three-point era, with you know, that might be different because guards have become so prominent and all mm-hmm. that. You look at Golden State, you say, well, okay, even before KD, they won a championship. However, Draymond is viewed as a star, and in the last three games of the year they won it in 2015, Draymond averaged 16 points a game. Iguodala averaged 20 points a game. That's why he won the MVP in part. So you need a front court player that can create, make some plays. It can't just all be guards. So if their front office can go out and make these moves, I think maybe that's part of what led them to go sign Carmelo Anthony. But if they need to somehow get a forward or center who can – legitimately give them 18, 20 points a game on his own. Not Clint Capella catching stuff at the rim, but a guy that can create, that they can run a high pick and roll.
Or a guy that can create for someone else to get a bucket.
Like Ray run a high pick and roll with Capella, you know he's going to only roll to the rim. If you run it with a front court player who can do something on his own,
yeah, that's the advantage Draymond has playing with the Warriors. Great point.
Listen, I think I've been as big of a public proponent of this team as anybody on television. I think they have the best GM in sports. I think Harden's been unfairly maligned throughout his career. They're never going to beat the Golden State Warriors. I do think they can win a championship because Harden's young enough and great enough and has shown a big enough commitment to his body, to getting better, to coming back each year and adding a new part to his game. But they are going to need the Golden State Warriors to age out of this region. Even if Durant leaves, they are going to need Golden State, someone else to knock off Golden State in the playoffs. You know, if it's still the Warriors together as this unit. They were up 15 in Game 6 last year on the road. Up 3-2 in the series, and they lost. They were up 15 in Game 7 last year at home. Tied series, 3-3, and they lost. They had a golden opportunity where the Warriors should have been the stunned team in Game 5 this year. Tie game, Kevin Durant goes out, and they lost. They had a home game where they're 7.5-point Vegas favorites. Almost all of our discussion Friday was about Game 7 because, of course, the Rockets can protect home court on a Warriors team that has six guys you even semi-trust. Steph goes scoreless in the first half, and they lost, despite Harden going 35, 8-5, to your point, scoring 12 in the fourth quarter. He didn't fall apart.
And a big game from Chris Paul, who we had.
Great game.
Chris Paul played the best game he's played this whole postseason, and they lost. I said last week, maybe they would be the Bulls to the Warriors Pistons. Not going on a Bulls-like run, but takes them a few years, and they finally break through. Maybe they'd be the Jazz to the Warriors, Rockets, and Sonics, and beat them up in the playoffs year after year. They finally break through. They're the Kings to the Warriors, Lakers.
Or the Suns.
Right.
Phoenix, Steve Nash, Suns.
Well, this is what I'm concerned about, because I believe that you can win a championship with James Harden. All right. I believe that he is clutch. I believe he has the durability. I believe he's made the adjustments. I believe he's not that big of a liability on the defensive end. I believe the owner. The owner's saying the right things. He's been aggressive. He's spending his money. He wants to win a championship. And I believe they have one of the best general managers in Daryl Morey. I respect how he goes about getting other players and everything. But couple liabilities here. Number one being their restriction as far as the number of dollars that they're going to have available over the next several years based on their commitments they've already made. And number two, you got a question. Will that coach ever win? Because he never won nowhere else. They got real close other places. Mike D'Antoni, will this system work? In this era in the NBA where it's about three-point shooting, it's about freedom of movement, it's about the analytics, if he can't win a championship now, when he ever going to be able to win a championship? It didn't work when he coached with the Lakers. Didn't work when he coached with the Suns. Where has this system? That's what someone's going to have to prove to me. So it probably take another player, a front court player, team with James Harden, and in the Western Conference now where Denver, they average 25. They're the fourth youngest team in the NBA. Like, there's a lot of things they're going to have to overcome. I don't think they can overcome the system Mike D'Antoni runs.
I'm glad you brought up D'Antoni, because the question is, can Harden win a championship? Can D'Antoni win a championship? I'm in the minority, I believe, when I say I think Mike D'Antoni is a Hall of Fame coach.
Wow.
His impact on the game in Phoenix and the success he had in Phoenix and here in Houston. But I think he's the Don Nelson. Don Nelson never won a championship, was kind of viewed as a gimmick coach, player's coach, won a lot of games, never won a championship. But I think D'Antoni has two major weaknesses. One, a lack of attention to detail. And two, he's non-confrontational. When you are in the playoffs and the difference between the clubs is this, those two things come back to haunt you. Think of his series in Phoenix with San Antonio. Those were close, hard-fought series, but it was always his team that missed the assignment, his team that made the bad turnover, his team that guys got off the bench. San Antonio's player didn't get off the bench. Mm-hmm. That's attention to detail. And when you're non-confrontational, you also don't say what needs to be said in the heat of the moment or even in practice, and those things come back to haunt you in series.
And I thought in the first half of the game number six, he was out-coached by Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr played 11 players, had the score tied at 57-57. Most important stat, Steph Curry hadn't scored.
Right.
So he had totally been out-coached by using those 11 bodies and with no production from Steph. That, I thought, was a huge difference leading into the second half.
Bring Carmelo back. Stick around, Broussard. Coming up, did Kawhi's buzzer beater change his plans in free agency? That's next up for Spurs. Back here with Chris Broussard, we're talking Sixers, Raptors, and Kawhi Leonard. His buzzer beater bounced four times on the rim before falling, winning both the game and the series for Toronto. Two of his 41 in the Game 7 win. So Toronto now moves on to face the Bucks in the conference finals. The Sixers are going home. Broussard, did this series win make it more likely that Kawhi stays in Toronto or leaves?
You know, when I – obviously, incredible moment.
Mm-hmm.
And when I – everybody's crying, some for pain, Joel Embiid, some for joy. There were reports Masai Ujiri, the GM, was crying in Toronto. And when you see that type of emotion, the thought did come to my mind of that's the type of moment that – seals a relationship. You know, it's going to make it hard for him to leave. And then I sat back and thought about it a little more, and I said, you know what, though? It's just the second round. If they go play Milwaukee and lose, or lose, period, but if they get hammered, losing five,
it's not like he made the shot, and then he's got to make the decision.
Right, right. I mean, this shot, obviously, it'll never be forgotten in terms of NBA lore, but if they get beat badly by Milwaukee, it'll essentially be forgotten.
Which is why I think it's important on this to look at it from the reverse. Let's just say Kawhi misses that shot. Nobody blames him. People maybe get on him for missing the free throw before, but he missed that shot. They go to overtime and Philly wins. Kawhi was so sensational in that game. Then it would have been his final memory of Toronto, or like his final memory of the season in Toronto. That is, to me, the type of game that could steer you another way, which is, wait, so this isn't the city I necessarily want to live in. This obviously isn't the weather I want to have. And the big drawing card is all this great talent around me. I can go for 40 in a playoff, in a game seven at home, and who around me stepped up? Serge Ibaka, and that's it? No one else made three or four shots? I think them losing could have been devastating to their chances to keep Kawhi if they would have lost this specific game where he is so good and his teammates don't show up. Now, him winning, obviously, I think it is one of those moments. I tweeted it right after the game. This is the type of moment that could keep Kawhi in Toronto for the rest of his career. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that this is a great moment. But if Milwaukee just beats the brakes off them, then it is Kyrie had some great moments in the first round of the playoffs. They swept. They feel great. And then Milwaukee beat the brakes off him, and now he's on his way out the door.
But do you think Kawhi wants to stay and is looking for a reason to stay, since now all of a sudden we're hearing that Toronto is far more of an option for him than just L.A.?
I know when Kawhi went there, he went there with a total open mind, not thinking about free agency, and really trusting the people that were there, because it's hard. The reason why he's in Toronto, it was lack of trust in San Antonio. Him and Pop were talking the whole way. Pop was like, listen, I got number one obligation. I love you. I love you, Kawhi. But I got an obligation to this organization to do what's best for them. So the probability of you going to the Lakers is not real, real high. I can't promise you that one. So Kawhi, I know when his team went there, they got it situated where Toronto hired some people. And in the trade, Danny Green came over that he was familiar with. They got a doctor that he could work with that he trusted. Put someone else on staff that he knew behind the scenes. And all these things, they begin to walk forward with good intentions. That's the way Kawhi is, regardless of what people on TV say who think they know him. I know that guy, all right? I know that guy, and I know what he went through was hell for him personally. For him to fight against Pop and that organization, the demand getting out of there, that's totally against all the fiber in his body. So for me, I'm just going to say this. Toronto is in the driver's seat. They could have not done anything better during the regular season. The work, the load management, that was perfect. That was part of what Kawhi wanted and the organization wanted. His experience with the medical staff has been tremendous. Right now, Toronto is in the driver's seat. But when Kawhi hit that shot, y'all can't forget what he went through. Because he was not a guy about publicity. He is not that kind of person. This was Kawhi's moment, too. I know the franchise. I know people at Jurassic Park. Like, they were cheering and everything. But I know Kawhi. And I know inside he's not a selfish guy. But for everyone who doubted him, everyone who said anything negative about him, all right, I know Toronto, they'll take a lot of this. The GM, he was crying. He should be crying. But for Kawhi Leonard, this answered a lot of questions when people question his overall basketball and sports integrity. He got that back yesterday with that shot.
Well, and also this series. This series was a coming out for Kawhi. And that sounds crazy because we all knew how great he was. He's a top five player, all that. But when you're in San Antonio and you do it, the especially when you're not a guy that was
ballyhooed.
Yeah, when you know, he didn't come out with any fanfare out of college and all that. We saw him in the tournament. He did okay.
Even his development, the way they start working on his shot, they get all the credit.
Exactly. Greg Popovich is kind of hovering over you, and you wonder how much of it's Kawhi, how much is Popovich, and that's how the credit is doled out. This series showed, like I put it out there, he's in the running for best player on the planet.
In the world.
Period.
Absolutely. There's no, to me, you can't make the argument against that statement that he's at the very least in the running.
No question.
To me, you look around the NBA playoffs, if we're going to say LeBron forfeited it by missing the playoffs, there's three guys left in the running. Kawhi, Giannis, and KD.
Right.
Now, KD is hurt and the Warriors won without him. That might hurt his case. But we're going to get to see, I'm so excited. I know we'll talk more about it throughout the week, but this series we're about to get, we never get that. The two players as evenly matched as Giannis and Kawhi on two teams seemingly as evenly matched.
Right.
We've had LeBron versus Durant, but the teams were drastically different. But the other thing for Kawhi that he's about to get is something he's never got, which is the stage of the conference finals or beyond as this level of player. You know the last conference finals game Kawhi Leonard completed was in 2014? He only played in two and a half quarters of a conference finals games in the last 5 years. He missed last season. Season before that, Zaza hurt him in game one. Two seasons before that, the Spurs were out in the first and the second round. So Kawhi Leonard hasn't played on this stage since he's been an All-NBA player, not just an All-NBA defender, since he's been a superstar. So that's the other thing that Toronto has going for it, at least in the moment. We'll see how the series plays out, is Kawhi gets to have, I know he's not a me guy, but it's very hard for anyone to not like the spotlight to a degree. And Kawhi Leonard's about to have the spotlight on him in a way he's never had in his career. He was going to have it a couple years ago, especially if they would have stolen game one against Golden State, but he got hurt. And now you're going to get to see him at this stage, which we've never seen.
He's perfect, just like Giannis. It's not going to change him. Just like Roz at the end, she wanted to ask him, Kawhi getting ready to walk off. Like, because he is not, this is who he is. He's not going to change with the stage, even though it's his team, and he is the superstar under the
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.